You're listening to Recovery, Healing, Outreach, and Awareness, a podcast about domestic violence, sponsored by Randy's House of Angels. Domestic or intimate partner violence is a complex and silent epidemic that affects millions of people worldwide. To respond to the overwhelming issues associated with domestic violence, Randy's House of Angels has produced a series of podcasts that will bring this epidemic to the forefront of public consciousness and break the silence that often shrouds it. This is Paul Miller, producer of this program, and by creating a dedicated platform, Randy's House of Angels hopes to create a safe space for survivors, advocates, and experts to share their stories, insights, and knowledge. A series of topics will be discussed that can offer vital support and resources to victims and survivors, helping them realize that they are not alone and that there is help available. It can also serve as a catalyst for raising awareness and fostering necessary conversations within families, communities, and institutions to empower individuals, foster empathy, and inspire collective action toward eradicating domestic violence while creating a safer, more compassionate society. We invite you to access the podcast by going to randyshouseofangels.org. Today, we will explore the various forms of teen dating violence, including physical, emotional, verbal, and digital abuse, and highlight positive and healthy relationship examples. We will discuss how technology and social media impact teen dating violence, including cyberbullying, harassment, and controlling behaviors online. We will explore how media and peer influence shape attitudes toward relationships and influence behaviors among teens. Finally, we will discuss common warning signs of abusive behavior in teen relationships. Joining us today is Ann Garris. Ann Garris is a seasoned counselor with almost two decades of experience as a school counselor and educational leader. She currently delivers the Randy's House of Angels curriculum designed to break the cycle of domestic violence to boys in 5th through 8th grades at the Nativity School in Harrisburg. 2 years ago, Ann was credentialed as a court-appointed special advocate and works with a family of 6 children to help navigate the foster care system. Certified in safe crisis management for over 10 years, and was also a seasoned trainer for the Family Support Alliance and taught the program recognizing and reporting child abuse to school educators. Her extensive qualifications include certifications in student assistance program, trauma-informed educational practices, mental health first aid, and more. Ann has a master's degree in counseling from Penn State and also holds a principal certification from Shippensburg University. Today's podcast facilitator is Sherry Peters. Sherry Peters, a master's level social worker, is a nationally recognized facilitator in the children's mental health field and currently serves on the board of Randy's House of Angels. Formerly the director of the Psychiatric Residential Treatment Facility Waiver Initiative at Georgetown University's National Technical Assistance Center for Children's Mental Health, Ms. Peters also spent 21 years in leadership positions in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's Office of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, addressing children's mental health policy and program development. This includes suicide prevention and trauma-related issues. In her early career, she spent a decade as a therapist in residential and community settings.
Welcome, Ann. It's really good to have you here today. And our topic for today, as you know, is More Than a Crush, Understanding Teen Dating Violence. So I wonder if you could just start by telling us what's the scope of this? Like, what are the kinds of abuse? What kinds of things can you tell us that our listeners might want to hear about that they may not understand?
Well, I think what you would want to start off with talking about either intimate partner violence, IPV, or teen dating violence, is that the CDC defines dating violence as any type of physical, sexual, psychological, emotional, within a dating relationship. And we include with that stalking and digital technology. And I would say that the CDC says it's a public health problem because 1 in 3 teens report that they have had physical or emotional abuse in their teen years. And that's what's reported. this is an underreported type of violence that occurs.
Wow, that's
it's a public health issue.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder how much the general public understands about this, though. The fact that you are faced with this in your work all the time. How do you explain some of this to the general public?
Well, it's difficult because the youth is romanticized in the media about when someone is being paying them a lot of attention or is always wanting to be around them. It seems romantic in the media, when in fact, it's a form of stalking. It's a form of controlling, which is what the violence is. It's controlling and manipulating another person to do what you want them to do. And so when people say they have young love, they look at it as a romantic, when it's really actually a person that's manipulating them to stay away from their friends, to do what they want them to do at their own time. And they don't realize it. And it's the interesting thing about the media and technology with stalking is that a perpetrator will figure out where the other person is, and then they'll show up at that place, whether it be a diner, whether it be the library, whether it be outside their classroom. And then it looks like they have the same interests because they're in the same place. And it's always like, oh my gosh, you're here too. I'm here too. This is amazing. We both love this movie. We both like this library. And the person, the victim, then thinks they have something in common, when actually the person is just stalking them the entire time.
So it sounds like with the growth in social media, there's a possibility that this has really exacerbated some of the teen violence or dating violence that might have been happening before social media existed.
It's much more prevalent, and, yeah. And but it's also misunderstood.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about dating when you were in middle school, right, and or myself
long
dating
time ago,
but even then, you don't have the technology. You can do on certain apps. You can scan a person's face, and they will rate that person as far as their beauty, 1 to 10. So let's say you're dating someone in middle school, high school, and they rate your face, and then they break up with you. And they rated you as a 6. Now they're going to rate somebody else, scan their face, and now they're scanning a dating person that's an 8. And then they screenshot that to all their friends sitting in your English class. You're suddenly sitting in your English class, and people are going like, oh, you're a 6, she's an 8. He dumped you because you're a 6.
Wow.
That's the type of things that are happening. And people would put that under bullying instead of saying it's actually teen dating violence. It's a violent act to a person you used to be dating.
So is it possible that it's both bullying and teen dating violence?
You would, but they need to come up with some better policies when it's teen dating.
Got it. Yes.
Because it's much more intimate, because there's a lot more that's exchanged in that romantic relationship than it is in just a power bullying relationship.
Yeah, but it's still a power and control.
Definitely
kind of thing.
Power and control for the
no matter how you look at it.
No.
And yet, it sounds like what you're saying is that schools may not have caught up with the ways that they could be preventing some of the teen dating violence, even though they may be trying to catch up with the bullying policies. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yes, they don't have the well, not just schools, right? Parents.
Well, parents too.
Over, across the board,
yeah,
we haven't caught up with what people can do with AI and technology.
That's true.
They originally created the AirTag so you could keep track of your computer or your luggage. Well, now you can stick that on someone's car or drop it into someone's backpack, and you can track where they are at all times. And so then in this case with teen dating, they will text you and say, well, you told me you were going to go get with your friends, and that's not where you are right now. And initially people think, oh, it's because they're so caring and they want me to be safe. And this is wonderful, they're looking out for me. And that's all the person, usually the perpetrator, says. I'm just worried about you. I want you to be safe. I love you. That's why I'm keeping track of you. And the person, the victim, is then like, oh, somebody cares about me. Somebody loves me. Somebody wants to know where I am. And that's not what it's total control. It's a different reason.
So how do teens begin to learn then about
this whole framework of violence and the power and control. How do they learn?
Great question about how they learn or where they learn it.
Yeah.
We have to understand that during this time period of their life, teenage years, the most powerful influence is their friends.
Right.
Parents used to be, because when they were young, that's who they relied
sure.
on. But now they're looking at this social interaction and the hierarchy and who affects what and what's going on. And so they're looking to their peers. So the education has to be at the peer level of raising that awareness of what does a healthy relationship look like?
Yeah.
You know, is there a part where you're respected or a part where you're being manipulated? Is there a part where you're it's going at a good pace, or is it being intensely going? And you have to start to look at that, the difference, the pace of how a relationship develops, even your friendships, but just in a romantic way. Is it really intense and all at once? I'd be concerned with that. So the education has to go towards the peers. The programs that are out there tend to look at what is a healthy relationship, how does it develop over time, mm-hmm. and what is an unhealthy relationship? Mm-hmm. What starts to get manipulative? What starts to get sabotaged? What starts to cross boundaries of telling what to do? And then to say, let's have a conversation about that. The programs out there do say, the research does indicate that once a program is delivered on teen dating violence, 6 months later, what has increased is the knowledge and the understanding of what defines a healthy relationship and what looks like teen dating violence or the behaviors of unhealthy behaviors. And so that has increased, that knowledge has increased. What they haven't been able to do is actually prevent the violence. But what else the indication, research indicates is that if you raise that awareness, children are more likely to seek out an adult or a peer to say, hey, does this seem strange to you that he's always everywhere I'm supposed to be? Or he says I shouldn't be hanging out with my friends anymore. You know, those behaviors that you think are we should have a conversation about. And I think there's a wonderful program for teen dating for parents, for conversation starters, when parents start to notice, is this a healthy relationship? He's always at our table. He's always in our home. or she is always calling late at night and my child's not sleeping. How do you get those conversations to start? You have to go about with, I've noticed a change in a behavior. Is this something we can talk about? Should I be concerned about that? Not accusatory. It's always starting with an I. I've noticed, not you have changed. Because obviously we all get defensive when someone sure. says that. So it's more of a conversation of, I've noticed, and should I be concerned? And if you're a parent or a friend, and you're not feeling comfortable in how your friend's relationship is developing, you can always start the conversation with, well, can I ask, what can I know about this person that would allow me to trust them more? And then that opens the conversation of, you don't trust this person? What don't you trust about them? And then again, you start talking about those boundaries that are being crossed or the healthy things that you see and then the unhealthy things that you see, and you draw a comparison. These teens have to be taught the differences between acquaintances, friends, family friends, that kind of language needs to have happen. I don't know if you know that there's an app that can tell you who's your best friend.
I didn't know that, no.
So what happens on the app is, depending on how many times you've been texted or emailed or by this person contacted, they go up as your best
wow.
friend. And they can see where they are in your best friend line.
Wow.
So if you're an angry, violent person and you're not number one on your romantic partner's phone, you're going to go after the person that is number one, or you're going to blow up their phone so
Got
they
it.
can become number one. So now her phone's going off the whole time, which is very stressful. If you ever hear that ding, 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 ding.
Sure.
But it's an app that tells them who their best friend is.
Wow.
So you have to have the conversation of there's different levels of friendship. There's different, where does that person fit? You're allowed to tell them where they fit, not an algorithm, not them. You're allowed to say where this person fits in your life. Those conversations need to be had by parents, teachers, counselors, friends.
to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, did you know that it takes a victim 8 times before she leaves her abuser? Also, did you know that 1 in 15 children are exposed to intimate partner violence each year, and 90% of these children are eyewitnesses to this violence? If you know someone in need, please refer them to randyshouseofangels.org for more information about the services that Randy's House of Angels offers our community.
The things that you're sharing are things that would not be common knowledge to most of us in the general public. And I wonder, are parents generally aware of some of the apps and the social media pieces that the young people are obviously aware of? Is this something that is easy to learn about?
It's easy. CDC.gov has an incredible site for parents. And there's also another one called Dating Matters for parents.
That's great.
Those are places that they can go and visit, and they can see ways to start conversations, what to look for when a person is developing a new relationship, what to prepare them with before they start even having a dating relationship. And I think that if you just Google intimate partner violence, you can find a plethora of information. What you're looking for is those conversation starters, those the ability to have an uncomfortable conversation without being accusatory.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts. You know, if you could say to the child, where is this child, this other person on your line of friendship? Where would you put them? You know, how'd they get there? How'd they earn your trust to become your best friend? Tell me what they did. You know, what are their actions that keep them as your best friend or as your romantic partner? You know, so try to find out how the child came up with that definition of this is my girlfriend, this is my boyfriend. And then that will help you understand where you should go if you see some unhealthy behaviors as manipulation, or hearing them say, if you don't do this with me, then I might harm myself. So if you hear those kind of things.
Yeah, it sounds like there's so much to learn about. And I wonder, you talked about the research has shown that when young people have an educational experience, their knowledge increases, but we don't yet know that the abuse or the violence decreases. Yet there's hope that once those conversations start, that perhaps that would increase too. Is there any research that shows like how much of this education is happening across the country or even here in central PA? Or is there still sort of a need for more of this education to be happening?
I would say that the American Psychological Association and also American School Counselor Association would say we definitely have a gap in communicating this is a health problem.
Yeah.
And I think that it needs to be something beyond just your health class. So in most schools, in health class, you're taught healthy relationships, unhealthy relationships, but you're not taught how to get out of it.
Yeah.
How do you get out of an unhealthy relationship?
Right.
How do you get into a healthy relationship? We can tend to just keep going socially, but not having that conversation of what does it mean if you're not the healthy one, and how do you get better?
Yeah.
And I think that there definitely needs to be a much more needle point of education that really understands that you're talking to a developing brain and its prefrontal cortex has not completely developed.
Right.
And
right.
Sometimes it's still running on its reptilian brain.
Exactly.
And it's fulfilling a need, right? It's fulfilling. So why do you have that need to be around a person who wants to control you and tell you who your friends are and what clothes you should wear?
Yeah.
What is it about you that you want to be around that? And if the answer is that makes me feel safe, well, then you have to figure out a more healthy way to make yourself feel safe. And why do you feel unsafe? But those types of questions need to be put into children's brains at an early age and then continue on through adolescence so that they're always aware of what they're entering into when they're entering into relationships.
And how much influence does a young person's family dynamics have on their ability to recognize healthy versus unhealthy relationship? Is that something you can respond to?
You'd be surprised when families say, well, we have a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have a conversation about how you got there a healthy relationship, they don't know. I know with my own family, we would talk about sometimes there's a conflict, right? Mm-hmm. And conflict is good. Conflict is just saying to you that you want something different than what I want. And let's have a conversation about that. One person doesn't automatically win that conflict, right? Sometimes you have to manage it. You have to come, you might not resolve it. You just have to manage it. But if you don't actually have a conversation, and children and adolescents don't hear you talking through this, they rely on their peers.
Yeah.
And they rely on how their friends talk about relationships. And if you want to be the one that influences how your child has it, you have to be the one that has to have that conversation about why did this marriage work or not work? Why did my romantic relationships in middle school not work? Tell them. Explain to them why it didn't work or it did work. Or, you know, notice what their friendships are like before they start to have romantic relationships. And then you can see, oh, you're navigating this really well. You're making friends, and you can keep certain friends closer, and other friends you say, oh, I don't trust that one so well. This is good. But when you go into a romantic relationship, all the dopamine, everything else is being released. It's a lot different, especially at such a young age.
Yeah.
So it's a conversation that everyone needs to be having. It has to be teachers, it has to be counselors, it has to be parents, it has to be anybody's in their lives, probation officers, anyone that's in their lives has to be aware that they have to have a conversation. And like I said, the research says when you have that conversation, they remember. Yeah. They remember your conversation that said, what does a healthy relationship look like? What does an unhealthy relationship look like? What are all the different types of ways that I can be manipulated? And they then report, when he says, let's take a picture because you're so cute in that outfit, I have to remember to say, don't tag that onto Facebook. Hmm. Or don't send that to your friends.
Wow.
And or don't send that to anybody. And then when I find out you do, I have to say to myself, ooh, I heard in the discussion that that's a form of sexual violence.
Sure.
So wait a minute. Do I want to be around this person? And if you have that conversation before they're in that romantic relationship, then that awareness is there. And they start to say, oh, I asked them not to tag me on that. Or why do they keep showing up at the same place I'm showing up? I should be a little more aware of what is happening here, that I'm being manipulated. And that has shown to increase. And it's shown that they then have a conversation with their friend. So that helps. What hasn't been shown is that we have not been able to prevent it, the violence.
And I wonder, you mentioned earlier that this kind of conversation has to start early. How young are you talking about? And when we're talking about somebody really young, what kind of conversations are they?
Oh, I think you can start as soon as your child is verbalizing they want to hang out with someone other than you, even if it's their sibling. You can talk to them about, how do you enter into a relationship? You greet them. You make eye contact. Is the person also greeting you and making eye contact? And reinforcing when they do that properly. And then say, you know, well, this is a relationship that you don't actually want to play with this person. So how can we get out of this situation? For when you're young, you can use me as the relationship. My mom won't let me do that. Okay? You can use that whenever you want. Even when you're 30, you can say, my mom won't let me do that. But it's a genuine conversation that's always ongoing. It's not like, let's sit down and talk about this. It's just, I just noticed that you don't seem to be comfortable around that person. What is telling you that you're not comfortable? What is talking to you right now? Your head, your heart? And then get them in touch with what's going on when they feel uncomfortable around a person. Instead of just saying, oh, that person's creepy. No, what is it that you didn't like about that? Did they stand too close? Did they say something you didn't approve of? And that then conversation is natural when they enter into a romantic relationship. They're not going to all of a sudden maybe put the brakes on in their conversation and say, whoa, why are you asking me all these questions about my new boyfriend? You know, why? It's just like, oh, my mom and dad always talked about this. My aunt always talked about this. So it should start at an early age, and it should just seem natural that you would, a parent. Again, the biggest influence is their peers.
Sure, sure.
So what you really want to be watching is who are they hanging out with before the romance starts?
Yeah.
You know, are they being manipulated by their own peers? Are they easily misled? And then I would really be thinking, we really have to have a conversation before you would ever try to enter into romantic, because you're going to find someone that's going to not make you the best person that you can be. And that's the definition of a healthy relationship. Does this person want something better for you? And are they helping you get there?
So I'm curious, in your experience, are young people beginning to date at earlier ages than, let's say, a few decades ago? Is this something that has changed?
Go back to that digital, the technology. They are experimenting with dating language at a far earlier age. And we do know that kids in the elementary level, you know, maybe 4, 5 through 12, they can develop a special kind of admiration for another person.
Sure.
Right. And they might be like, I love them. And that's when you start to talk about, well, let's find another word. You admire them. You enjoy them. That you like to be around them. And they might then say dating. And, mm-hmm. and I would be saying, you're too young to date. But you can enjoy this other person's company, right? You can learn from them.
Sure.
We're not going to admonish you for that, but I wouldn't call it dating, because dating, by definition, you go somewhere. You do something. If you're between the ages of 5 and 12, you don't have a driver's license. You're not going anywhere. I'm taking you there, so I'm on the date also. So we're all dating. So I wouldn't say that they can't have a special feeling for another person, because they can.
Right.
You can't deny that.
Right.
And you can't admonish it. But you can say that is not dating. When they say we're going together, where are you going? You see each other at school, and then you text constantly, but you're not going together. But again, I wouldn't put a child down for saying that. I would just try to create a better language, a more definitive word or language that you would use, so that you can so that they would understand, again, the difference between an acquaintance, a friend, a lifelong friend, a family friend. There's a language we use. You need to use a different word than dating or going together. But unfortunately, with the modern technology, they could be in contact with someone who is in their 30s and 40s, and they wouldn't know it. And they can very easily be manipulated.
So can you say a little bit more about that piece, the manipulation through social media by an older person that perhaps is pretending to be a young person?
They do, and they pretend to be a younger person. And my 14, 15-year-olds pretend to be 16, 17, 18-year-olds. So you also have to be very cautious when you're deciding to date. But again, it's much easier if you're an older person, even in their 20s, to manipulate someone and do violent acts with someone who's 12, 13, and 14, because their peers are so powerful. So if you can be in your 20s and pretend like you're in your teens, you can easily manipulate them. And especially if you have access to money. So this is a great one I can tell you, is that we're texting on the phone and we're talking on the phone, and the older person says, listen, can I order you some Grubhub? Can I get you some food delivered? And of course the young person goes, oh my goodness, yes, you can. Would you deliver me something from Taco?
Wow.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. So would you deliver me something from another restaurant? And the person goes, oh yeah, I'll have it delivered. And then like as they're texting or talking on the phone, the food is delivered. So imagine the powerful feeling that you, as the victim, feel taken care of, right? Somebody has provided you sustenance.
Wow.
Somebody has provided you a friendship. And so then they say, hey, will you take a cute picture of yourself and send it to me? Part of your body. And they're like, oh, well, yeah, that's kind of fun. And now they have this out, and then they can put it on the web. And we have a sexting issue. And this happens even in the middle schools. They take a cute picture of their friend who they're dating. They break up. They send all those screenshots to their buddies in school.
Yeah.
And so it's a difficult situation when you don't know who's on the other end of your line. And you're communicating with them and you think that it's going to be something romantic. But what I would like to just people to understand is that this is a public health issue. If 1 in 3 teens report that they have been in an environment where they had violence in their life, you would say that's trauma.
Absolutely.
And let's do something about that.
Yeah.
and at least just raise the awareness.
Yeah.
If you raise the awareness, they will go to their peers and they will ask for help.
So what else can we do about this public health issue? You've talked about education. You've talked about parents accessing some of the resources that are available to help have these conversations with their young people. Is there anything around public policy that we need to be thinking about that can help to address this?
There is. I think that we need to integrate it in a way that you can actually see the outcome. So it has to be some delivered in a way that you don't get to be 20 and sit in a college classroom and the majority of you raise your hand when you say, did anybody know anybody with teen dating violence? And majority raise their hand. And then they say, did anybody have a program in school on this? Anyone have it at their Y? And only two people out of 20 raise their hand. That tells you something needs to be done. So something around policy or integrating into schools, not just your health class.
Yeah.
Actually have a program that's integrated into a school, into the system.
Yeah.
I would like to say, though, there is a very interesting website for CDC where you can go on and you can test your relationship by doing an answer survey. And the outcome will tell you where the unhealthy relationship is showing you red flags and what you can do about it. And
wow.
So if a parent or a peer or yourself is just a little concerned because this awareness has been raised, you can go in and answer the questions on it, and it will tell you where you're rated as, is this a healthy relationship or not? So things like that, having that, like giving that to a high school student when you think they're not having a healthy relationship, if a counselor had that information or a teacher or a parent, they could go do it themselves. So it would be a good thing to have it as training in schools for awareness, or training with people that work with youth, children and youth, anyone that works with youth.
Sure. And when you suggest that filling out the answers to these questions would also give some resources about what to do about it.
It does. It tells you.
So can you give some examples of what can you do would be?
First of all, you have to ask for help.
Okay.
Because the violence increases once the perpetrator knows you want to be out. That's the time when they're most likely to harm you or release pictures of you or stalk you. It intensifies. When they realize that you realize that this is not a good thing is when they try to manipulate you even more. So if you know that, then you can figure out, it tells you where you can go for help. And it has a great button on it that if you click on it, it takes away the cookie. So if anybody come up behind you to see if you were looking at something, it goes away right away. So
no one can track it.
So they can't say, what were you just looking at? And you click it and it goes to a different thing, a website. So they can just be like, oh, I'm just looking at this and then we're fine. just so you know that there's an escape button on it. But it does give you resources to go to. It tells you who you should reach out to. It gives you phone numbers to call anytime, 24/7, that you can talk to someone about it. And it talks about then getting your peers to surround you and healthy peers to surround you. Turn off their phones to this person. Block this person on any kind of social media. And for all of them to do that, all the peers to do that, it helps you understand a better way to handle the situation.
Those are really important resources for young people. So we're going to be wrapping up. This has been quite a conversation. I love all the information that you've shared with us. I wonder if there's any last words of wisdom that you would like to impart, anything you'd like to share to wrap up.
It's been wonderful to be here. Thank you for letting this information to get out there. This is very helpful. I've listened to your other podcasts and you've talked about what a healthy relationship looks like and all those examples. So it's nice to know that we're going to go to the next step and talk about prevention and resources. So that's wonderful. And what I would say is that if you're wondering where to go, cdc.gov is great. There's other ones you can put on the resources there. Love is not hurt. That's another good one. Love is respect. They have great things on how to talk to your child about dating.
Wow.
So have those difficult conversations.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Randy's House of Angels is sponsoring season 2 of a series of podcasts that will serve as a resource to anyone impacted by domestic violence, including parents, guardians, caseworkers, health providers, advocates, teachers, trauma specialists, clinicians, and more, to provide an overview of domestic violence and how to handle situations where domestic violence is present. Season 2 will include a series of 7 podcasts that will include an overview and understanding the link between domestic violence and homelessness, the relationship between domestic violence and pet abuse, how to navigate domestic violence in an LGBTQ+ relationship, understanding teen violence, the challenges of survivors and resilience revolution from victim to victor, and exploring how cultural traditions impact domestic violence. The podcast will include testimony and stories from experts who work in the field of domestic violence, criminal justice, and social work academia, and a survivor who was a victim of the domestic violence. This podcast will be broadcasted starting in July 24 and running through September of 2024. Go to Randy's House of Angels website at randyshouseofangels.org if you missed the podcast, if you'd like any of the resources that support the podcast, and to take a brief survey. Your feedback is essential to shaping and informing future episodes of our show.